it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hello and welcome to another Zero Ducks Given Daily during this England versus India test series. And you can tell that it was a hell of a test match, and you can tell that this is going to be a hell of an episode because I've just watched Daniel Norcross take the biggest puff on an inhaler, not a cigarette, an inhaler I've ever seen him take. He's now, by the way, got a cigarette in his hand. So that's probably, you know, where his asthmatic problems derive from. But I just watched us, I pressed record, and then I watched Daniel Norcross just take the biggest inhale from an inhaler I've ever seen. That's how big this England victory was. Daniel, I mean, what the fuck? Where do we begin? Jesus. I mean, we'll do a full episode in the week, so this is only meant to be our sort of initial thoughts, but how we're going to keep this to 15 minutes or under, I've got no idea, but we're going to do our best. But I think the lesson here is we should just never, ever, ever question anything that this Ben Stokes England test side does, because over the last few days, and I'd like to point out that I said England were going to win this test match and win the series 5-0, and I'm looking very smug at the moment, but we have questioned free spinners, we've questioned bowling Tom Hartley into the ground. I questioned Ollie Pope after the first day of this test match.
You did. And
when I say we, by the way, I'm sorry, you listening to this podcast, don't tell me you didn't ask these questions at points over the last few days as well. But this side has just, from 190 runs behind after the first innings, beaten this India side that's only lost three of its last 47 test matches at home or something, hasn't lost any of the last 16 series at home. He's just beaten this India side on a pitch designed for spinners. They've got Ashwin Jadeja Patel. We've got Jack Leach on one leg, Rehan Ahmed and Tom Hartley and Joe Root. And I can't quite understand what I've just seen. Now, Daniel Norcross, the first question I'm going to ask you on this podcast is this, and taking emotion out of it, is this England's greatest ever test win?
Yeah, it's a very tricky one. I mean, it's certainly up there with Sydney in 1894 when England won the fifth and deciding match. Or was it might have been the first match of the series? I forget which. But having been told...
You don't remember the series in 1894?
Well, they were forced to follow on with a deficit of 260-odd. The difference was that they had players that I will reel off that you may never have heard of, but who were genuinely world beaters in their time, likes of Johnny Briggs and Bobby Peel and Tom Richardson. These guys were enormous names in late Victorian cricket. Whereas...
I'll take your word for it.
Well, I can tell you that there were much bigger names than Tom Hartley, Rehan Ahmed, a busted Jack Leach, and the part-time stylings of Joe Root. I mean, I think it is, insofar as everyone knows going to India is the toughest assignment that there is. It's tougher than Australia, actually, for other sides. We've seen Australia actually be beaten by India relatively recently in their own backyard. But no one goes to India and wins the series. Australia nabbed a test match last year at Indore, but they were 2-0 down at the time. Australia have won another one since 2013, and we won that famous one in Chennai. So there's only been two countries that have gone to India and won test matches in the last 11 years. They are England and Australia. None of them have gone on to win a series. And it's just the lineups. I mean, what's so spooky, befuddling and confounding about all this is you start to think that Baz Ball or Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum could pick anyone and turn them into world beaters in the second innings. I mean, literally anyone. You could have got the call up. We'd all have gone, Toby Tarrant? Isn't he a pace bowler?
I wouldn't have. I would have got the call and I would have said, yeah, excellent decision. Yeah, well, yeah,
I'm tall, yeah, bowl it into the pitch.
Yeah, you and Finney may have had doubts. Yeah. I would have gone, yeah, you've chosen well here. You've got a hell of a player on your hands. But yeah.
Well, you'd have been smashed for a couple of sixes in your first over, and then Stokes would have kept you on and kept pumping your tyres up and telling you were great. And you would also miraculously have discovered that you were a really good bat as well. Let's not forget his partnership with Pope, his 80-run partnership. He didn't really look bothered
in both innings, Hartley. Those runs are looking crucial now. Well, I mean, it's always easy after, especially the day of cricket that we've just seen, to sort of get carried away. By the way, again, I feel like I should always start the podcast with what's happened. But then I'm also like, if you listen to this, you probably know the bullet points by this
they
point.
Know. They know.
But England won by 28 runs. That's all you need to know, having trailed by 190 after the first innings.
Can I give you a stat on the 190?
Please.
This to me is the most astounding stat. It's such a Baz Ball stat as well. And it's about how it doesn't matter what the match situation is. The focus always remains in a Baz Ball team in trying to put pressure back on your opponent. So in the entire history of Test cricket in India, the highest deficit that India have had, like 65 runs, the highest lead they've ever had when they've lost a game before. 65. This is 190. I mean, that is like not just breaking a record. I think I said it's like breaking the 100-meter record by 3 seconds. It's absolutely absurd. And it's unimaginable. They didn't just do it, you know, through attrition either. You could sort of have imagined that at some time in the past, maybe Tavaray and Boycott would have got stuck in for 2 days and then scored 300 runs and the Indian bowlers would have just died of heat exhaustion or their fingers would have fallen off and that's how England got over the line. But no, they did it at going over four and over. It's ridiculous. And to put it into context, these aren't just good spinners. These are among the best spinners ever to have played the game. And they are definitely among the very best spinners to play the game in their own conditions. The idea that Tom Hartley, who has played 20-odd matches, he was only bowling, I think, in the second innings of a first-class match. Is it something preposterous like for the second time?
Yes, yeah, something ridiculous like that.
Can take seven for against batters who know how to play against this. You know, they come up against those bowlers. They are aware of how you're supposed to play against spin in India. Is utterly ludicrous. And watching Stokes, watching how he changes, and this is something that I think we've all been starting to get our heads around now, is that Stokes can begin a series by doing some things that you just think, that's just crazy. Like he didn't open with Root in the first innings. He allowed Jaiswal to get on top of Hartley. He set strangely attacking fields with a score of only 246 on the board in the second innings. And he said openly in his interview afterwards that he said, I'm quite a good reader of the game, quite a good thinker on the game. And I was out there watching while Rohit Sharma was captaining while we were batting. And I thought, I might need to modify what I'm doing a bit here. So he's completely changed his approach. He's completely changed his field settings. He's got more in-outfields. He's protecting boundaries, but he's also being able to keep it tight on the one. And suddenly those economy rates absolutely plummet. Yes, I know it's fourth innings, so you've got that kind of pressure. But don't forget that, I don't know about you, but when I woke up absolutely shattered and watched the first session with my body aching inside, expecting nothing but disappointment. And because it had to be, because of the deficit of 190 and no one's come even close to that, overturning that deficit to win. Why am I doing this to myself? I just thought this pitch is slow. They can't get Hartley out. They certainly can't get Pope out. How the hell are England going to bowl India out? How is that going to happen? And then suddenly there's more than the occasional magic ball. There wasn't some not, you know, indifferent Indian batting, I'll give you that. But there were also some magnificent balls. The one that Hartley got to turn past the outside edge and whack the off stump. That's a beauty. It just brings tears to your eyes. And at the end of it, what I would say to people is don't think about the second test or the third, fourth, or the fifth. Don't think about the series. today is a day for reveling in the absolutely monumental glory of such utter bewildering, confounding madness, because it may happen again. Lightning might strike again, but we put into context, which I think we have done in the first 5 minutes of this, it's a unique experience. This isn't something that comes on once in a lifetime. This is something that comes around once, never. That's what's happened. Never. And not just a bit never. It's nearly three times the previous biggest deficit that someone's managed to overhaul against India in India. That is utterly ludicrous. So don't think about anything tonight, folks. Just rewatch the highlights and sit there in your pajamas, crying salt tears of joy, blubbing like a little baby at the remarkable wondrousness of sport. And remember that the next time you question anything that Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum do, pause, take a deep breath, and say, I don't know, maybe he might have got it wrong right now, but in about 3 hours' time, he'll have fixed it and everything will be great.
He just makes everyone look so stupid. And you always think at some point he's going to make himself look stupid, and he never does. By the way, so there's a couple of things I want to talk about, but the reason I said you shouldn't get carried away after a test match like this. But my argument for it being, I don't think it's England's maybe greatest ever test victory, because I said take the emotion out of it, which was a key sentence, because it hasn't decided anything. If we lose 4-1, don't forget we won the first test last time and then got spanked. So all those famous victories that have won us, I think of chasing runs in the dark in Karachi and, you know, Headingley 81, all those sort of things that have actually defined series are obviously always going to be worth a bit more. And also there is the fact that beating Australia always counts double as an English cricket fan as well. So that's a factor. So whether it's the most emotionally charged, best ever test victory, it's probably not Edgbaston 2005 or whatever. But I do think it is the best day 3 and 4 in English test history. I really do. I think to be 190 runs behind against this, not just India, this India side in their conditions, with our team, I can't even begin to imagine. Like, I don't know what odds they were offering on an England win after first innings, but it won't have been enough. I mean, it was 150 million to one chance of us. I mean, it really is stupid what's just happened. It really is.
It's never happened before.
The odds should have been. Bet365 should have said, don't waste your money, don't be a moron, if you had tried to bet on it, right? In amongst all the beautiful chaos, and Tom Hartley, we've talked about here, who bowled, the main thing that was lovely about him was, it wasn't just that he took 7 wickets in a day 4 spinning pitch, it's that he bowled so well. And the difference, every time they did a slow motion replay, the difference on the amount of fizz you could see on the ball, the angle of the seam between the first innings and the second innings, the first innings where he was just letting it go and hoping to get away with it, to this bloke who just by being, I guess, caught up in the baz-ballness of it all, was a different man in that last innings. The ball looks so much more dangerous, even in the slow motion replays. But the bit I want to talk about is the fielding. Ollie Pope, as if he hadn't done enough, who around the bat now is the best I've seen since we had James Taylor, and sadly we didn't have James Taylor for long enough in that short leg position. But Ollie Pope took two stunning catches at Sealy Point. I mean, no right to take them. One of them, Gill just basically played a forward defensive that was a bit uppish. And Ollie Pope went, no, that's mine. But the Ben Stokes run out was absolutely bloody ridiculous. Now, if you haven't seen it, I don't even know how to describe it. He did what would normally be a good piece of fielding anyway, saving 4 runs. He dived and stopped a drive one-handed, and in the same motion, flicked it behind his back at pace, which is the bit I can't get my head around. He generated enough pace. I mean, he's at mid-off and he hit the stumps and it ran out Jadeja by a few inches. Jadeja by a few inches. Yeah.
And it did his hamstring in the process. So
he injured Jadeja. I mean, so it's a 2-for-1.
It is a 2-for-1. And it was remarkable. I mean, Catherine, my wife, was I made this strange like noise. Said, oh, you've got to come and see this. And she was gobsmacked. And it's because if you watch it in real time, and they did show the real time replay at one point, the speed of thought, which must be really instinct rather than thought, that it's his only choice. And you've seen him do those backy flick things before. They never hit the stumps. This one was dead-eye accurate. Had Jadeja out by over a yard. And it was so crucial because Jadeja's exactly the sort of person that could bat and bat and bat. Because he doesn't care. Doesn't care about bat's ball. Doesn't care about pace.
28 runs. So Jadeja is 28 runs waiting to happen there, isn't there?
Exactly. And, you know, it takes you back to Ashwin getting run out in the first season. Those two run outs, very, very key. But they were brilliant in the field. They were so tenacious. They ran after every ball. So much so that poor old Leach, because this is one of the principles of baseball that Brendan McCullum starts every team member off in, which is you chase the ball to the boundary, even if it's a lost cause, as hard as you can until it hits the boundary. And poor old Jack Leach has got concussed doing that at Lords and has now smashed his knee doing it here. So it doesn't work necessarily for Jack Leach, but it's the attitude. And you could see it in everything.
Just Jack Leach.
I mean, the poor old Rayan Ahmed did one of the first innings that was extraordinary. It was actually signalled four in the end, but he nearly pulled off a
Rayan
truly remarkable
step count running around that boundary in this test. Paul Blunt was at deep mid-wicket chasing everything all day.
They were all of them just on it, and they never showed even the slightest bit of tension. And this is the thing that's so remarkable about Stokes' captaincy. He looks like he's just in complete control, and everybody just totally trusts him. There are a couple of other little things that came out of the post-match presses that he loves having Ollie Pope there in that position, because Pope's now vice-captain, of course, has been since last May. And apparently he gives Stokes like an update on what's happening close in, what the pitch is doing really close up. And Stokes says, you know, where I stand, I get one view of it. He gives me another angle, which is so important, just feeding information back, which is great for England that people feel that they can do that. But whatever Pope says to Stokes, Stokes still is his own man. He makes all the decisions. Some of them seem strange, chopping
some
and changing
of
bowlers. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, mostly
they
seem strange.
Fucking mental.
But you've just got to buy into
just,
it.
You just have to. And honestly, I swear there's a... Not that social media should ever be taken as serious for anything, but there seems to be this still... I mean, we've got a long episode coming up. We'll do a full one with Finney, but there's a few things I want to talk about. We're not even going to talk about the wonderful West Indies-Australia thing, other than what a added bonus that was. We'll talk about that in the full episode. But there's this side of Twitter at the minute of English cricket Twitter that almost wants baseball to go wrong so that they can shout about it, because they keep getting pissed off about mad things that Ben Stokes does and then looking stupid. And you almost feel like there's people going, fuck me, he's making me look an idiot here. I mean, you just have to just accept that maybe, and this is a crazy thought, that Ben Stokes knows more about cricket than you do. I mean, initially I thought he was just a madman, a fearless madman. But now it's happened too much. You look at Rawalpindi and now this. And I'm like, he's just a genius, isn't he? He's not just saying, you stand there, because it looks cool and it's mental. He's going, you stand there because I think the ball might go there. That's the difference.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's so many things of that sort, aren't there? But it also gives you the opportunity on Twitter sometimes just sometimes we get our own back on some Aussies. And
so
I can't,
please tell me, let the final word on this mini podcast be Jim Maxwell, and I'll leave it to you, Norcross.
Well, Jim Maxwell, I'm very fond of Jim. Spent a lot of time in commentary boxes and indeed wine bars with Jim, and had many pleasurable evenings. But he's, let's say, a baseball skeptic, to put it mildly. And much like many Australians, because Australians tend to think that the game of cricket has some kind of moral aspect to it in the way that it's played. I don't mean the spirit of cricket. I mean actual shots you play. So, for example, Ian Chappell has for years been suggesting that the English are in some way morally degenerate because they play the sweep shot. No right-thinking human being plays a sweep shot. They're morally degenerate people, the English. Now, of course, the sweep shot, and especially the reverse sweep shot, has never been played so effectively. I believe 90 runs were scored to the reverse sweep.
I think Ollie Pope scored 190 of his 195 with the reverse sweep.
It felt like that. But I guess what this is building up to is this notion that what England are doing by playing the way they're doing is an effrontery to the very game. It's showing a lack of respect for the age-old precepts that make cricket the game it is. And dear old Jim, 2 days ago, on a day when we were both a little bit low, after India had scored a lot of runs against what looked like a deficient England spin bowling attack, had tweeted in response to a Test Match Special tweet in which Jonathan Agnew had said, "We wondered about the inexperience of England's bowlers, and he, Jaiswal, took them to the cleaners." Jim Maxwell quote tweeted and said, "Baz Bollocks has moved from batting to bowling. Absurd selection. Unbalanced. Inexperienced. At least England picked a wicketkeeper." Which is, you know, nicely trenchant from Jim. So he had to send four words, especially because Australia had just lost by 8 runs and therefore could no longer win that 2-test series, which was tied at 1-1 against the West Indies in their own backyard. "Just checking in, Jimbo." At which point, pretty much everybody did a pile-on on poor old Jim. So hopefully he's still in bed. But in around about 5 hours' time, he's going to find that his phone has just got a bunch, and I mean everybody who loves cricket in this country, from the Greg Jameses to the Chris Addisons to the Mark Steeles to all of us, and to every single one of his friends and colleagues in the commentary box, have just gone full-on troll. So it's petty, it's infantile, and it's silly, and we don't mean any harm by it, but it is one of those beautiful things you get to do in sport, as long as you don't take it too seriously, is to be able to upset an Aussie. And on a day like this, I'm not sure. I'm going to go back to your original question. Is this England's greatest victory? I think because the West Indies managed to get over the line with an 8-run win on the same day, I think that double whammy has made this a day we should never forget.
It's something beautiful. Very, very special indeed. And we'll do it in more detail on the next full episode when Finney's back. He's currently in Barbados for a few days before he has to go to Stockholm for TNT Sports, the coverage of the cricket. We'll talk about that in the next episode.
Be looking forward to that now, I imagine.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, thank you for joining us. What a test match. And I told you it was going to be 5-0, and Norcross and Finney doubted me, and I told you. So I'll see you in the week, Daniel, for a full debrief, and we can proper stick the knife into the Aussies on that one.
I can't wait.
Podcast Network.